There's a woman named Evelyn Gibbs who was elderly and she loved Halloween. But on Halloween day, when she was so looking forward to greeting the children and all the costumes of the neighborhood and giving out candy and experiencing that joy, she had her arthritis acting up. And she was like, I don't know how I'm going to do it. I'm going to open the door over and over again and you know, hand the candy and hold the bag. And so she had to think about what she was going to do. And so she decided that what she would do is hang the bag on the doorknob, turn the porch light on, turn the lights off in the living room, and sit inside and watch all the costumes and the experience from indoors. And so this is what she did. And of course, the ghosts and the goblins and, you know, the Ninja Turtles and, you know, what all the latest and greatest costumes are, angels and so on, came through. And toward the end of the night, she was getting a little concerned that the candy was going to run out. You ever had this fear? Oh no, the candy's going to run out. Or had to run back, you know, I've done runs back and forth to the store, happily in a way, that so many children are coming. Anyway, so that wasn't the case for her. She just had the supply and it was getting thin and she thought, I better get up and turn the porch light off. And just as she was doing that, four more children came. Three older children and one little witch. And the three older children dug their hands in there right away and got their candy. And the little girl, the little witch, was left standing there, and she was rousing around in the bag, and Evelyn's worst nightmare was coming true. There might not be any candy left for the little witch. But she came up in the corner of the bag with a single orange jelly bean. And so Evelyn was watching to see what's the little witch going to do. And she stands there, and she looks at the house, and the other kids are yelling to her, Emily, you're not going to get any more candy. Just come on already. There's nobody home. But that's not what Emily was up to. So she's holding her little jelly bean, and she says, thank you, house. I like my jelly bean. And she put it in her bag, and she scampered off. And that is the attitude of gratitude. Emily knew nothing about the scarcity myths with which we probably will teach her well. There's not enough, more is better, and it's just the way it is. Those are Lynn Twist's scarcity myths that we've talked about during this prosperity series. She was instead fully aligned with prosperity, with gratitude, with abundance in this tiny jelly bean. The simplicity of gratitude sometimes is what helps us really nurture that attitude. The simplicity of life allows us to focus on what it is we're grateful for. So as I mentioned, we're in a series that we're actually winding down the series today. We've been discovering the four pillars of prosperity. The first week was laying the foundation of faith. And we began to put up the pillar of vision, the first pillar. The vision that we hold for our lives, the expansiveness of the vision, the expanding of our territory is one of the ways we looked at that. And then the second pillar was looking at where are the blocks to the good? You know, where might we be holding back or holding the good at bay through our resentments or our grudges or the places where we need to forgive? And so that second pillar, forgiveness, allows the channel to be freed again and the good to flow with ease and with grace. And then last week we looked at generosity, the pillar that is all about that law of circulation, that act of giving and receiving, being in that kind of flow, that generous heart that gives and receives in the giving and also opens the heart to receive as others are giving to us. And then this week, of course, the final pillar is gratitude. So it's, in a sense, we've erected a strong house of prosperity together. And we continue now to dwell in that house of prosperity as we look at this final piece, gratitude. So we all kind of intuitively, I think, understand, and from our own experiences, understand the value of gratitude, why we would want to develop an attitude of gratitude. But sometimes it takes a minute to just kind of look at these concepts and these qualities that we value and see what is it about it? Why do we want to develop this attitude of gratitude? And one of the things that gratitude does for us is it opens our heart. When we are in a place of gratitude, we're in that kind of open space that allows the joy to be felt as well. And so when we are in that space, we are also in that timeless place of spirit, right? Fully present. When we are in a moment of feeling grateful, everything else is suspended, and we're in that space where all the misalignments and the maladies of the world seem to be healed in those moments when we are feeling thankful, grateful, blessed in some way. And when we are in that present moment, we are more aware of what it is that we are, spirit, and what it is that we have. A multitude of blessings. Sometimes, though, we are quick to put our mind on what it is that is missing and what it is that we think we don't have or what we think is wrong or needs to be corrected or fixed in some way. Usually when we're in those places, it's not so joyful. Have you noticed? Oh, yeah. With enthusiasm. Such was the case with the widow in the Bible over 2,000 years ago, who had just become widowed and had two young boys. And if you think about over 2,000 years ago, culturally and in that time, particularly women didn't have choices to bring in funds and support their families. So without a husband, she had to resort to very few choices and none of them attractive. I could sell my sons into slavery. I could sell my body, or sell myself into slavery, or give my sons away to somebody who maybe could take, you know, I mean, the choices are not attractive choices. And so she was at a complete loss. What do I do? And she went to Elijah, the prophet, the teacher in the area, and she said, "What do I do, Elijah? Here's my situation." And she was in that place of, "I have nothing." And he says, "What do you have?" And she says, "I have nothing." And he says, "No. Really, what do you have? You must have something." She thought about it, and she looked around her house, and she said, "Well, I have this little bit of oil." That doesn't really sound like what you had in mind. He said, "No, that's perfect." So this is becoming very mysterious to her. So he says, "Tell your sons to go out to all the neighbors around the area and to ask for vessels, to borrow all kinds of vessels." And so the sons came home with bowls and vases and glasses and all kinds of different vessels. And this very important instruction, the next one that Elijah gave her, was to then close the door for you and your sons. Close the outside door. In other words, close that door that is out, that faces out into the world. Come into the place of inner consciousness. That's what we just did in our time of meditation, right? We closed the door to the outside world, the cares and concerns, and we sat with the prosperity of spirit, of all that is and continues to bless. And so it is in that consciousness that she then began to follow his instruction to pour the oil into the vessels. And lo and behold, the oil seemed to multiply. There was so much. It just, that little bit of oil just filled one vessel and then filled the next and filled the next and filled the next until there was only one vessel left. And she called to her son and said, "Get me another vessel." And he said, "They're gone." And just then the oil stopped flowing. See, the oil never actually really stops flowing. The love never really stops flowing. The money never really stops flowing. But if we don't make ourselves an open vessel to receive, there's nowhere for it to go. And so it will seem to stop flowing. It is that receptivity and that gratitude that keeps the flow moving. And so when we are present to what we have, we say it every week, divine love, one with me, blesses and multiplies all that I am, all that I have. That's what Elijah was teaching the widow and what she learned well, because all of that oil, she and her sons brought it to the market, they sold it, and they had plenty to live on. It's really the way it works. It's the way it's supposed to work. And then we just forget and we slide into those scarcity myths or some kind of scarcity myth that says we must hold on. We must be like the trick-or-treaters that are grabbing big, you know, big handfuls of candy. Because there's not enough, because more is better, you know? And there's a lot of that going on in our world. And yet we know when we sit still like this and we celebrate gratitude and we drink in beautiful music and we are praying together about prayers made of grass, that we know we live in an amazingly abundant world. And that amazingly abundant world is something to be grateful for. There are studies that say that those who feel grateful are happier people, those who practice gratitude are happier people, and those who express that gratitude are even happier. So one step is to feel it, and the next is to say it, or express it in some way. It doesn't have to be said, it can be danced, or painted, or given as a gift, or a hug, whatever it is. But it's a thank you in expression that really seals the deal. So wherever you're feeling grateful in your life, make sure you express it as well. Dr. Robert Emmons is a professor at University of California. I'm not sure which campus, but he has written prolifically on gratitude. He's written like 60 articles and a couple of books, and he studied it thoroughly. I think, wow, what must that guy be like who studies gratitude all the time? You know, probably very grateful and very happy. Because this is the connection he's finding, is that happy people practice gratitude, and those who practice gratitude report more happiness. People who practice gratitude, they report, and through his studies he's learned, that they see life as a gift, and they see benefits to life, rather than a perspective that says it's earned or it's deserved. So that earning or deserving is sort of one set of thoughts. But these people who are happier and more grateful just see it as part of life. It's like a natural part of life. That there are gifts to life, there are benefits to life, and that we are givers of those gifts and those benefits as well as receivers. He said very little in his studies show that anything about happy people has to do with their circumstances. It's not about circumstances. It's not about what looks in the outer world like something that we might call not a happy circumstance. It's all about the inner attitude, the way that we think and feel about our situations that make all the difference. And you know, we always have a choice, don't we? When we are developing gratitude, we always have a choice in how we will approach any situation. There are two travelers, and they're walking in the hot sun for a long time. And they are hungry and thirsty and hot and tired, and in the distance there's a tree. And the travelers begin to think about the tree and the excitement of getting to the tree. And the one is focused on there being ripe fruit on the tree, and how he's hungry and thirsty and he can't wait to pick some ripe fruit from that tree. And he's thinking there better be fruit on that tree as he's getting closer. And the other one is just thinking how magnificent that there's a tree. You know, just can't wait to get to that tree. And so they get there, and the one who was looking for fruit is disappointed there's no fruit. And he's cursing the tree. They're standing in the luscious shade, and he's cursing the tree. And the other one is leaning up against the trunk of the tree, and he's saying, oh, but the shade, isn't it so lovely? So, of course, the traveler who understands the gift of what is and isn't resisting what is the happier man. He will travel through life with much joy. And this is always our choice. We can focus on what's missing, what's wrong, what needs to be corrected, or we can approach the whole swath of life with an appreciative inquiry. Have you heard of appreciative inquiry? It's something you can bring to your organizations or your family or your own self to say, what is working? So instead of often the way that we're oriented is to look and say, what's not working, right? Let's give our attention to that. Let's improve that. Let's figure that out. Let's, you know, fix it. And instead, the whole idea is that you just look at what's working and you just focus on that. So your full attention goes on what's working, and guess what happens? Everything begins to work, because that appreciation does what? Whatever we praise increases. So the good that is working, we get more of it. And pretty soon the things that we would have perceived before as not working, they sort of fall away because there's so much good expanding from that which we put our attention and love on and praised and therefore grew. It's so simple, isn't it? You know, I knew somebody, actually the person who introduced, the friend of my sister who introduced me to Unity fell away from Unity, and my sister said, "Why aren't you going to Unity anymore?" And Alice, her name was, she said, "Oh, it's too simple." Yeah, simple, one thing. Easy? Not so much. Maybe she didn't stick around long enough to see that it's about the walk. It's about how we live the principles. It's about how we use the principles, how we practice. How we practice the gratitude and the prosperity. The late, great Maya Angelou said, and she didn't have necessarily, if one were to look at her life and circumstances of her life, necessarily an easy life. But some of you may not know that she's a Unity person, or was a Unity person, considered herself a follower of Unity and went to some of the churches and read the materials and believed in our philosophy. And what she would often say is, no matter what happens in your life, the appropriate response is thank you. No matter what happens. And by doing so, even in times when we think the last thing we're going to say is thank you for this situation, when we do find ourselves going there, we open up the opportunities. We open up the space for spirit to move. We open up the place for the good to flow. When we constrict, can't flow so well, right? When it's not okay, it needs to be fixed, it's not working the way according to our plans, doesn't really flow so easy. What if we just said, thank you? And if we can't see the blessing, that's all right. If it remains really hidden from us in the moment, that's all right. That's when that foundation of faith kicks in and we say, God, reveal the hidden blessing. I hold to that possibility. I know that truth. And I continue to say thank you for the good that is flowing forth from this situation that I may not fully be able to see it now. But I am sure to see it in good time. Those kinds of shifts in our thinking are a big part of what the attitude of gratitude does for us. And it's contagious, isn't it? When you're around somebody who's really grateful and feels blessed for everything, I think of that moment. I know I spoke to you the other day, but think of that moment when I came here at the end of the circulation day. And those volunteers were tired and hot. It was like over 100 that day, and they were moving big stuff all day, and they had more loads to take. And Lonnie just told me about all that she looked hot and exhausted, but she told me about all the blessings of the ways that we had given to our community on that day by sharing with them our teachings. And it was pure heart gratitude. And I thought, that's living the principles. When despite our outer circumstances, we can breathe and live and be the thank you, the gratitude, then more good comes in and flows through. Our attitudes are definitely contagious. Dr. Robert Emmons also studied people who practice gratitude by keeping a gratitude journal. And he found that people who keep gratitude journals sleep half an hour more a day than people who don't, wake up more refreshed, and exercise 33% more than those who don't keep gratitude journals. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? So there is a sense of this simple practice and what a blessing it can be to all areas of life. A gratitude journal can be as simple as writing 3 things down before you go to bed that you're grateful for that day. And chances are if you write 3, you're going to want to write more because that's just the way prosperity flows. And if you don't want to write it, although I do recommend writing it because it solidifies it. It's another step in that co-creative process. But if you don't want to write it, you can certainly think it or speak it. Speaking it would be another way that you would be putting it out into the world in a more manifested form than simply a thought. There was a stonemason, Piero Ferrucci tells this story. And the story is about shifting our thinking, as so many of our stories are. The stonemason worked really long hours at hard physical labor. And at the end of the day, he was very tired, and he was very disappointed in his small paycheck. And so he just sort of mumbled and grumbled and said, you know, what a life. This does not bring me any joy. If this is all there is to life, you know, I'd rather not have it. And he began to dream about what it would be like to be a rich man. And if he were a rich man, he could loaf all day, and he could eat fine foods and be entertained and put his feet up for a while. And he heard a voice, and it said, that which you imagine yourself to be, you are. And poof, he became a rich man. And as a rich man, then he had a beautiful house, and he had tons of food and entertainment, and he got to loaf. But pretty soon, although that was lovely, he got bored. And he saw a king and his entourage coming by one day, and he said, man, if I had the power of the king, wouldn't that be fabulous? All the things I'd get to do. And of course, the voice said, whatever you imagine yourself to be, you are. And he became the king. And he loved being the king. He could call all the shots. And you know, everybody feared him in the kingdom. And so he had all this great sense of power and bravado. And so for a while, that really fulfilled him until he began to want again. And so he started walking around outside just thinking, man, what do I want? And he looked up at the sun and he thought, wow, now that's power. If I could be the sun, I would be the center of the solar system, and the earth would revolve around me, and I'd sit way up high in the sky. And so, poof, he became the sun. And so he got to radiate his rays down upon the earth and to feel that he was the center of it all. And he loved the power and the heat that he was able to disseminate as the sun. But pretty soon the clouds started coming by, and they were obscuring his view of the landscape. And he thought, man, those clouds, they look so free. And they can shapeshift, and they're puffy, and they're misty, and I want to be a cloud. And so, of course, then he became a cloud. But pretty soon, the clouds sort of condensed, and they became water, and so he was rain. And he became rain, and he was falling upon this rock. And he thought, wow, this rock is so strong and sturdy and stable. I wish I were a rock. And he became a rock. And so then he was really enjoying the security and the solidity of being a rock. And he said, you know, I think this is what I was after all along, being secure and solid like a rock. He said, I get massaged by the rain and the cool breezes come by to refresh me. The warm sun beats upon me. And I'm just here, you know, fully present on the earth. I like being a rock. In the distance, a man was coming. He was slightly stooped and he had a hammer. And he came close to the rock. You guys are quick. And he began to chisel away at the rock. And the rock, he felt some pain. But more than that, he felt dismay. Because he thought, well, what it would be like to be the man who was chiseling the rock. And so the stonemason became a stonemason. What was different, though, is that he was now grateful. He was now grateful for who he was, and he had a completely different attitude about who he was. So now to him, the work was fulfilling, and at the end of the day, he would feel that satisfaction of a job well done. He felt the meaning of creating all these rocks that might turn into some grand cathedral. And he could see the visions of where his work might go. He would have those kinds of dreams at night, and he would sleep like a baby after a day of a job well fulfilled, really knowing what he knew was that the whole universe was within him. That sense of oneness with all ultimately brought him the gratitude. So gratitude about simply being grateful and thankful for what is right now. We can always vision into a future, but it doesn't have to make us unhappy now. It's all happy. It's all joyful. It's all possible. It's all expansive. It's all prosperity in action. So the beauty of this gratitude is really the beauty of life. And what is life but like a big trick-or-treating experience, right? The tricks of the mind will tell us that there's not enough, more is better, it's just the way it is, and all the rest that is not true. When we are in the tricks of the mind and we follow that, we'll get off track, we'll get out of alignment. But then there's always the opportunity to see the treats, to experience the treats, the love, the joy, the peace, the gratitude. We can be and take our cue from that master of gratitude, the little witch who stood outside a house one day with a little orange jelly bean and said, "Thank you, house. I like my jelly bean." Let's close out with an affirmation. Together, I am a grateful, faith-filled visionary with a forgiving heart and a generous spirit, and so it is.